Welcome to episode 11 of Old Stories, New Information. I'm your host, Brent Colley, and on today's episode, I am joined by Merrill Rogers, a friend, a historian, an educator, and a regional volunteer extraordinaire. So welcome, Merrill. I'm so happy that there's not yet another town referendum that prevents you from being with us today.
You are not the only one who is happy about that, and I'm delighted to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Sure. Yeah, so, you know, you and I know it. So across from East Street, where it meets Route 4, there's an old millstone. Now, unfortunately, due to, you know, the present-day traffic volume and the speed on that section of Route 4, you really don't see it if you don't know about it. It's kind of what historians call hidden history. Now, Merrill and I know about it because there's a photograph in the Sharon Historical Society archives that shows a man, Joshua Bell Chaffee, standing in front of the millstone, and he's reading a plaque attached to it. So, Merrill, at some point this plaque was removed or stolen?
Yes.
When do you believe it was stolen?
I just looked through my the records I have of photographs, because I photographed it when it was still on the millstone, because my husband and I just loved the inscription because it says it ground merrily away through the entire Revolutionary War. And the earliest photos I have are 2002, so I would say it was stolen in the early 2000s.
Okay. And so you kind of mentioned what you were able to write. What did it commemorate?
It commemorated the site of a grist mill that had managed to stay hidden from the British troops and loyalists to the British. Evidently, one of the ways of waging war was to destroy infrastructure. Sound familiar? And
yeah.
The British would, if they found a mill, they would destroy it so that it couldn't grind grain into flour. And grain that's not ground into flour is pretty useless. So they were trying to starve the colonists into submission. And this particular mill was known to a lot of farmers all the way into the Hudson Valley, but the British could not find it.
That's amazing. You know, it's it happened down where I grew up in Fairfield County as well, and it happened all across Connecticut. So I can understand, you know, the importance of a mill that could stand alone to provide for, I'd imagine it provided for not only just the locals that were pro-war, but also loyalists that were smart enough to know that they needed flour, because as you and I both know, you can't just go to the market at that time of history for what you need. So we do have the plaque picture, and the exact text reads, the Poconuck Historical Society of Sharon has placed this tablet upon one of the millstones used in the grist mill standing here, the only mill between this place and the Hudson River to escape destruction at the hands of the roving bands of Tories which infested the country during the Revolutionary War. This little mill, impartially ground for all who came, many of whom were from the Hudson River Valley, some 40 miles away. It was looked for but never found by its enemies, and so it ground, as you said, merrily away during the whole war. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense knowing what we know about Route 4. Route 4, as we know it today, was totally different back in that time frame. Route 4 was created in 1932. But prior to that, there were much windier routes to get up through Ellsworth and our town and other regions. It was more of like a spiderwebish kind of road situation there. Like, for instance, in the present day, you would come up from Cornwall Bridge and take Old Sharon Road number 2, but coming up from Cornwall, the large bridge wasn't there. You actually had to cross a covered bridge that came across from Popple Swamp and Brook Road on the Cornwall side, and then the covered bridge would come out just where the church is today, and then across River Road, and then you'd wind your way up the hill. So it was completely different. And on the other side, you had roads like Silver Hill, and that ran into Dawn Hill, and then down to the Housatonic, and then you know you can get to Kent and Warren, and so it was so different in terms of main routes in that time period. The turnpike itself was actually from Poughkeepsie to Sharon to Goshen to Hartford and beyond. And that ran through the present-day Route 343, and then up and over Jackson Hill Road and on to Fairchild, and then it would drop down to West Cornwall and then across the covered bridge. So most of the people from New York would probably go that way and know that way best, whereas the locals, as we do now when trees fall over the road, know how to get around just because of local knowledge. So if you were coming from New York in the roundabout way to this location in the present day, you'd come up Clark Hill Road from the Wasaic area and then over Niblo, Cary Hill, down to Keeler, and then make a left and head up over Westwoods Road number 2 and then down to the mill. So apparently, according to past historians, that's what the farmers would do, and then they'd gather in a common area, and then they'd go down to the mill when it was their turn.
And it must have taken them a long time. Even if you drive on Westwoods 2 or Old Sharon Road number 2 now in a car with rubber tires, you can see how difficult a road it is. I can just imagine with oxen trying to pull carts with wooden or iron. Did they have iron in the Revolutionary War for tire,
Wheels? But you're right. You know, they would be going over these muddy roads just like we are presently, and if they had enough weight, then they would be somewhat bogged down. But thankfully, the oxen were strong enough to make that less of a challenge, but it still was a challenging trek, even in that time frame.
It was, and evidently they would gather around and travel at night, at least when they were coming from the Hudson River over to Connecticut, because they were going through areas that were completely occupied by the British, and so they needed to really stay under the radar until they got closer to Sharon, when then they could travel a little bit more safely because, again, they knew the back roads and the British didn't.
Yeah, and it really was no man's land. It was kind of a lawless area in terms of that time period. They called the individuals either cowboys or skinners, and they would basically rob anyone who came within that area. It was a difficult time, for sure. So that's most of the old story. So now let's get into the new information. So you let me know that the plaque was just recently returned. How did that happen?
Well, it disappeared evidently sometime after 2002, and I will try to find out exactly when it disappeared. But you could see the outline of the where it was on the millstone, and it's big. It's, I would say, 4 feet by 3 feet, and it's bronze, so it was really heavy. Somebody really had to work to get it off. And everybody assumed, oh, alas, it's been melted down for the metal, and we'll never see it again. And then in 2021, I was looking through research inquiries at the Historical Society, and there was a picture of the plaque. And I said, holy cow, I actually said something else, but this is NPR. And I ran up to the curator, and I said, I know this plaque, and I know where it came from. And a lady named Kristen Bierce had sent us an email with this picture. She had been at the Connecticut Antique Machinery Association tag sale, which they have at the Sloan Stanley Museum every fall. Kristen had grown up in Sharon. She lives in Maine now. She was visiting family, went down to see what was going on, and saw this plaque that said Sharon on it and was intrigued, so she decided to buy it. She asked the man who sold it to her, where did you get it? And he said, at the Elephant's Trunk tag sale, which is a big one just a little south of New Milford, that he couldn't remember who he bought it from, so we have no idea what kind of a journey it took. But it ended up in Kent. A former resident of Kent bought it, asked us about it. When we told her the story, she offered to bring it back to us. So the following summer, when she was, again, visiting family, she lugged this thing, which must weigh a good 85 pounds, into the Historical Society. We had an angel who offered to reimburse her for what she had paid for it, and it's now in our possession. We're not sure if we want to put it back on the millstone because it might get lost again. We're considering asking the state if we could move the actual granite millstone to the grounds of the Historical Society and then put the plaque there. I think it would be a little safer there.
Yeah,
but
that's
true. Is above my pay grade as far as dealing with the state.
I could help.
Okay.
No, and that's something that did come up when we were going through the pandemic. That was one of the locations where I stopped and did like a little video about the location just to keep everyone, including myself, sane. And so one of the suggestions in the comments, I shared it on Facebook and Instagram, was we should move this, you know, valuable piece of Connecticut history somewhere else. So it has definitely come up in the past, but it's fun because the documentation with this in our collections were it's not known when this mill was built or by whom. They say it's Theophilus Smith and Micah Mudge. They're both mentioned as part owners, and it later became the estate of Obadiah Bierce, the grandfather of Mrs. Ryan, our librarian. So the question mark is, like, is Kristen related to Obadiah?
And I looked in the Hillside Cemetery records yesterday, and there are Bierces buried in Sharon. Believe it or not, there's a Euphrates Bierce. I mean, they had some interesting names back then.
Okay.
But there's no Obadiah. But I can look through, you know, born, married, and died. The man who wrote up this thing in the Peconic Historical was named Lawrence Van Alstyne, and he has done some wonderful things for Sharon, including a book called Born, Married, and Died. So I'm going to check there tomorrow and see if I can find out a little bit more about Obadiah. But it would be an incredible quirk of history and fate if Kristen is actually a descendant of a man who owned this mill.
Yeah, and that's what's so fun about this. And there's always these stories that we keep crawling back to, and this is a great one.
So, this one really is. It's got a happy ending.
Yeah, no, it's return. It's always been a question mark for anyone who's been aware of it, and now we have it back in our possession. I can't believe it weighs that much. That's a heavy little plaque.
And it's bigger than I remembered, which is funny because as you grow older, usually things are smaller than you remembered. But this one, up close and personal, is really big. You could make a coffee table out of it.
Wow.
Maybe we can have it recast and have a fundraiser, you know, buy the Gristmill plaque.
I like it. All right, so Meryl, thank you so much for being with us today. This was a fun one. And, I appreciate all you do. Just so listeners know, like I said, she's a volunteer extraordinaire, and she's a part of the curation team at the Historical Society that I call the Fun Bunch. And in my time there, I always enjoyed their days back in that time frame. It was Thursdays, and it was always, I made a point to stop in because they had so much fun with those collections.
We still do, so keep stopping in, Brent.
I will.
All right, thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to tell people this story, and I enjoy your show, so keep up the good work.
Thank you. No, it's been great, and, you know, people just, you know, if they really enjoy certain topics, they can email us. They can write stories at robinhoodradio.com. And that's how we'll keep circling back to information that people want to hear. And I think the next one you're going to want to tune into, in the next episode, we're going to discuss art, fur traders, and the importance of personal journals via Seven Hearths down in Kent, Connecticut. And Marge Smith will be my guest on that one.
And it's a wonderful historical society, so I hope that you get down there to see that fur trading room. It's great.
Well, that's what we're going to promote. So.
Okay. Thank you so much, Brent.
Yep. So until next time, be well and always do right. This will gratify some people and astonish the rest. Enjoy your week.
Old Stories, New Information with Brent Colley is produced at the studios of WHDD 91.9 FM, robinhoodradio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.